Blog Talk Radio. Welcome. This is Dr. Rita Marie Loscalzo, and welcome to your Vibrant Health Solutions radio show. Today's topic is one that is near and dear to my heart, and it is all about how gluten affects the brains of children, oftentimes unsuspecting and unsuspected by parents and teachers alike. This topic is something that caught my attention quite a few years back, and as a result, I began to study and to research the effect of gluten on the brains of children and how a gluten-free diet can be used therapeutically in cases of all sorts of neurodevelopmental issues with children, including autism, Asperger's disease, which is on the autistic spectrum, ADHD, and even things like schizophrenia and depression. So these diseases have become somewhat epidemic in our society. I'm sure not a single person listening to this today has not met a family who has a child that has been diagnosed with ADD or is autistic or is somehow considered a behavioral problem or a problem with learning and ability to focus and pay attention. So it tends to be a very widespread problem. Even the American Psychiatric Association is estimating that there's up to 7% of the population at any point in time has ADD, and to me it seems like there's a whole lot more than that as well. So we're always looking for solutions, and the issue is when kids are found to have some sort of learning or behavioral issue, they are often prescribed drugs. And the types of drugs that they're prescribed are things like Ritalin and Adderall. And these are drugs that are stimulants. They're actually stimulants, which is really bizarre when I first learned about this, and most people think, well, what do you mean you're going to give a stimulant to a child with ADD? It doesn't make sense. So the category that these drugs fall in with are actually a very, very strong class of drug and a very, very addictive class of drug. And what happens, and the reason that stimulants are given to children with attention problems and behavioral problems, is that the problem stems from the inability of the brain to be hyper-vigilant and hyper-focused on a particular area. And when you can stimulate that brain to be that way, then you end up having a kid that can focus rather than being distracted and all over the place. So it may seem kind of counterintuitive to give a stimulant to a child who's already overactive, but it seems to work. But not without side effects. Like I said, those drugs are very, very addictive. They are also very commonly fall prey to street drug use. So there are kids who are either on the medications themselves and selling off part of their stash and, you know, somehow managing to get new, or stealing the drugs from a younger sibling or older sibling that has the drugs, and they actually get good money on the black market in school. Kids are taking these drugs illegally, and that can be serious, serious danger. So we want to be able to find problem solutions that are not related to drugs, that are really related to solving the underlying imbalance that's happening in these kids' brains. So one of the things that led to the discovery of gluten as something that was involved was that there's a lot of evidence that some of these neurodevelopmental disorders, and particularly autism has been studied extensively, that has an autoimmune component. So there were researchers who actually studied the brains of kids with autism and found that there's particular cells called Purkinje cells, and these cells can get damaged, and they were wondering why these got damaged. Well, there was an autoimmune process that was attacking them. And tracking it all back, it comes out to an autoimmunity related to gluten. And dairy products as well can be involved. And basically anything can be involved, but those two tend to be involved most often. So in the brain, we've basically got a brain is a set of neurons, and then there's these things called dendrites, which are like the tails coming off the neurons. And the communication between the nerves in the brain occurs through the dendrites. The ends of one nerve kind of, you know, plays around and communicates with the end of the other nerve, and the signal gets transmitted. And the signal is transmitted by chemicals called neurotransmitters. So when you have damage that occurs to these dendrites as a result of autoimmunity or inflammation in the brain, the communication between the parts of the brain gets disrupted. Okay, so you don't have the kind of communication that it needs to either turn up the volume, make the brain more attentive, or turn down the volume and make the brain less hyperactive. So one of the issues that we get into when we're dealing with children's brain chemistry is how does their nutrition affect that brain chemistry? And there's a lot of things that go into that. And we can do another talk on feeding the brain in terms of neurotransmitters, in terms of fatty acids, in terms of B vitamins and minerals. And these are all factors that go into the health of the brain and the ability to transmit signals from one to the other, one part to the other, and to do it appropriately. If any of these nutrients is out of balance, and they do become out of balance very easily from the types of diets that most kids are fed from the time of birth almost on. Lots of kids are fed cow's milk formulas, which are deficient in certain nutrients, especially until recent years, very deficient in DHA, which is a fat that very much affects brain chemistry. They're then moved into the standard American diet or the standard, you know, wherever diet, but the Western diet tends to be high in refined foods, which are deficient in these nutrients, high in toxicity and chemicals and preservatives that disrupt the immune system and the ability to create good brain chemistry. So all of this leads to a problem with brain chemistry. One of the biggest contributors to problems with attention, with focus, with learning, is gluten. And let me tell you a little bit more about gluten. Gluten is a protein that occurs in wheat, and it also occurs in things like rye, barley, triticale, kamut, and spelt. And it occurs in differing amounts in each of these. But the triggering component that appears to be the problematic for kids with autistic spectrum disorders and attention and learning problems is a fraction of the protein called gliadin. And wheat itself has the most potent gliadins of all. There are about 15 different strains that have been found to be problematic and can be affecting the brain. So there are several different mechanisms by which gluten can have cause a problem in kids' brains. The first one is an immune system response, something called autoimmune response. And what an autoimmune disease is a situation where your body is making antibodies to fight off part of your cells. So antibodies are a really important part of your immune system, right? So if you get something like a staph infection or a streptococcus, or you get exposed to somebody who has measles or mumps or chickenpox or any infectious disease, your body's immune system will create these antibodies to attack that and get rid of it. The thing about the attack from an antibody to what's called the antigen, which is the foreign invading protein, is that it's a mess. It's kind of like a war zone, right? Maybe you get out of it alive. Maybe your immune system wins and kills off the invader. But there's some casual injuries that happen as a result. So there's some inflammation. There's some tissue damage. What you'd see on the external is when body's fighting a disease is you create a lot of mucus. You create a lot of histamines, which cause your eyes to run or your nose to run or your chest to get congested and be unable to breathe. It can cause histamines in the skin, which cause your skin to break out. It can cause histamines in your brain. And the thing about the brain swelling is that you don't really see the swelling in your brain. You know, you can see it on your arms. You can feel it in your sinuses. But the way that swelling in your brain manifests in is disruption in mental focus, disruption in your ability to think straight, disruption in your ability to control impulses, which is why kids get into trouble with not being able to control their impulses and having these hyperactive behaviors and behaviors that cause them to get into trouble at school and at home and in daycare and all over the place. So when the swelling is happening in the brain, we don't actually see it or feel it as well as we do, and we don't know it's happening other than by the outward manifestations of behavior problems, inability to focus, learning disorders, depression. So there's a whole host of different types of things that have been associated with gluten, with the ingestion of gluten and the way it affects the immune system. Most people think about gluten intolerance as a gut problem, and classic disease associated with gluten intolerance is called celiac disease. And in celiac disease, your body creates antibodies against the gluten that attacks the lining of your small intestine. And as a result, people with full-blown celiac disease will get diarrhea and bloating and gas after they've had wheat or gluten. And they notice this. They notice it as a problem. However, those antibodies, the same kind of antibodies that can attack the intestine, can also attack the brain. And as far back as, I believe it was 1908, I had a note here in my notes. Yes, as far back as 1908, it was discovered there was a book that was called Sprue and Its Treatment. And in that, they talked about the fact that the sprue, basically the celiac was what they would call it, celiac sprue, was affecting the brain cells. And they found that there was a variety of neurologic and psychiatric conditions. And sometimes they occurred even without the intestines being messed up. And this is the kind of way that the gluten tends to be an insidious problem, one that's hidden that a lot of people don't notice, is because if you're looking for a gut involvement with celiac and you assume that because there is no gut involvement, then there's no problem with the gluten, then you're making a huge mistake. And what they're finding now is that oftentimes the intestinal manifestations in lots of folks is at the end state of a gluten intolerance, not at the beginning. So we're missing a lot of the diagnosis of gluten intolerance because we're looking for gut problems and not necessarily finding them. So back in 1908, this book that was written listed the following conditions as related to gluten intolerance. There are epilepsy, dementia, early onset of Parkinson's disease, Alzheimer's, schizophrenia, depression, migraine headaches, seizures, encephalopathy, chorea, which is when your body just kind of does this spontaneous movements that are not necessarily planned. It's almost like tics, but it's just more choreographed type movements. Brainstem dysfunction, which would lead to imbalance problems. Dementia, I said that, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, myelopathy, which is problems with your myelin, like an MS type of a disease. Problems with your muscles, where the nerves aren't communicating properly with the muscles. So those nerve endings that attach, that communicate with your muscles, can have problems. So you see things like neuromuscular diseases. Even Guillain-Barré-like symptoms. And then autism, ADHD, Asperger's, and peripheral neuropathy type diseases. So what we see is there's actually physical changes in the brain when these things are present and when the gluten intolerance is present. So let me just talk to you a little bit about the ways that gluten affects children and behavior, the mechanisms. One is the autoimmune, which we already talked briefly about. And there's specific people that have been a specific genetic tendency. There's a specific what's called HLA, histocompatibility locus antigen, which defines some of your genetic tendencies. And there's certain pattern of genetics that predispose people to creating antibodies to gluten. And they've measured them. You know, people look at measuring antibodies, and there's anti-thyroid antibodies. There's anti-DNA antibodies, which is found in lupus. There's just about anything, islet cell, which is found in autoimmune type 1 diabetes. So there's also anti-Purkinje cell antibodies that have been found, and those are the cells that are in the brain. There's also anti-cerebellar, which is part of your brain stem. So there's a lot of different antibodies that have been discovered and associated with gluten intolerance. So if your body is creating this antigenic reaction, this antibody reaction, your cells are being attacked and actually destroyed. One of the things I mentioned in the write-up for this is that identifying a gluten intolerance and taking it away from your child can actually save their life. Why? Because these antibodies can be damaging parts of their body, and it can lead to life-threatening disease. Kids with celiac disease, they've definitely associated increased cancer rates, increased mortalities from all sorts of conditions. Part of it is because of the effects it has on the digestive system and nutrient imbalances that come about. But if you look up mortality and gluten intolerance, you will find that people with especially undiagnosed celiac and gluten intolerance have higher risk of death. So it's really important not just to get your kid behaving properly in school, not just to get your kid to have better behavior, but in terms of their overall health. So one of the things that came up for me, my son has a gluten intolerance. We've tested him. And by the way, one of the best ways to test for gluten intolerance is an antibody test in the stool. And it's a lab called enterolab.com. That's enterolab.com. Getting tested by this lab has saved so many people I know from so many problems. Started out with one of my dear patients, dear friend, who we diagnosed with this problem with gluten, and she started talking to her friends and saying, you know, that symptom might be related to gluten. And just from her experience with how much it changed her life, she affected so many lives in our circle of friends that went out and got this simple test, $99 test, determined that they were gluten intolerant, went off the gluten, went on a completely gluten-free diet, and saw dramatic changes in their overall health. So it's a very simple test. It's a very easy thing to test. And if you or your child is suffering from any sorts of kind of unexplained problems, whether it is in the brain and its behavior or its inability to sleep properly, obsessive compulsive behaviors, depression, get them tested for gluten. It's a very simple test. And the solution is very simple. It's very simple. You just remove gluten from the diet. But it's not that easy. Once you remove the gluten from the diet, you also have to work at repairing the damage that has been caused by the gluten. So there's usually an intestinal repair process that goes on, and there's other things that need to happen. But overall, the dramatic changes happen in lots of people when they just get off of the gluten. The other way, in addition to the autoimmunity, that the brain gets affected by gluten intolerance is that if the intestinal lining is irritated by the gluten antibodies or by the gluten protein, that can cause malabsorption. So you don't get all of your nutrients to be absorbed in your system. It actually takes the brush border of the intestine, which are these little villi, these little spiky things that stick up from the surface, and they're the absorptive surface. And that's where all your nutrients get absorbed. Well, one of my colleagues described this. I really loved this analogy. He said a normal intestine is like a shag carpet. It has these big used loop-de-doos, and everything goes into those. And then when you have a problem with gluten, it blunts those villi. It actually damages those villi and makes it more like a Berber carpet, which is very flat. And what you need to do, in addition to removing the gluten from the diet to help these kids, is you need to then plump up that intestinal lining. And there's a number of nutrients that can do that. Vitamin B1 is one of those. There's a number of foods they have to avoid. So it's not simply a matter of just avoiding gluten. There's other things you need to do to basically clean up the war zone, if you will. Another way that the gluten affects these kids and affects their brains, and adults as well, is through an opioid mechanism. And what's been found is that there are certain peptides, and peptides are short chains of amino acids. Proteins are made up of huge chains of amino acids. What your body needs to utilize for building blocks of protein is to break that protein down into its individual amino acids and then absorb them as into the intestine. When gluten is incompletely broken down, the protein gluten, there are a number of different peptides, and there were actually, I think, 15 of them that were identified in gluten to be peptides that are opiate in nature. So these peptides are short chains of amino acids. They may be two, they may be three, they may be four amino acids. And they are bind to opiate receptors in your brain. Well, what are opiates in the brain? Opiate receptors are there for when we create our own endorphins, which we create as a result of certain activities, sometimes exercise, feeling of euphoria that comes with certain activities. You create these internally generated endorphins, which stimulate your opiate receptors and just make you feel good. Well, it is possible to get addicted to your own endorphins, and that's why we see a lot of people who are addicted to exercise. And if you have exogenous opiates, when we think about opiates, we usually think about cocaine, heroin, and what's the other one? Cocaine, heroin, and poppy. There's one other that that's not coming to mind. Morphine. Heroin and cocaine. Morphine is the more medical use of the opiates, and then cocaine and heroin are more the street drugs. So here's what happens with kids. These opiate receptors get stimulated by the proteins in wheat from incomplete digestion. And the opiate receptors go, wow, this feels good. And when you're on one of these drugs, you just feel high. You don't feel particularly inspired to do your work. You just feel like high. And one of the things it does is turn down the pain threshold. And if you look at autism, some of the things that autistic kids do are things to stimulate those senses back, to stimulate some of that pain receptor stuff, like banging their heads against the wall or inflicting damage on themselves or doing their incessant rocking. Okay, so when your brain gets a dose of these opiates, it wants more. And so you become addicted to those foods that trigger that opiate response. But as you get more, you need more to get that good feeling. And so that's where the addiction comes in. Just a little bit is not going to give you that good feeling anymore. You need more and more, kind of like a drug addict with cocaine or heroin or morphine. So that's another way that it affects it. So affects kids' behaviors is through that. So these series of mechanisms, inflammation in the brain from the autoimmune process, lack of nutrients because of the disruption of the intestine, and then opiate response, which puts the kids into that drugged out, stoned out state, all affect kids and affect their behavior. So what do we do about it? Well, I think that you can start, if you suspect this, by going on a gluten-free diet, putting your child on a gluten-free diet. From there, you need to work with somebody who knows what they're doing, you know, works with somebody who knows how to help them repair their intestinal tracts and put them on specific nutrients to help repair some of the nutrient imbalances. A lot of times I've seen just immediate responses just to taking the antigens out of the body. Example is my son who has been tested for gluten through that EnteroLabs test, and if he goes and doesn't stay on his gluten-free diet, he becomes belligerent, he becomes has an inability at school to focus, he gets a little antsy, he has behaviors that are more representative of a younger kid, you know, kind of like the little teasing kinds of behaviors that they do with each other. He just changes. He changes dramatically. And when we take him off of that, it's better. I found after we took him off the gluten, within a couple of months, it's like, you know, it's like I can really have these really nice conversations with him. It's like he's really connected. He's asking questions. He's calm. It's just, Mom, you know, okay, I'll do that, as opposed to, I'm not going to do that. So it made a huge difference. Now, a lot of people have said to me, well, you know, let your kid occasionally have the pizza with the friends or do other things. It's really important for their psychological well-being to do that. However, here's the deal. It may be good for his psychological well-being. It's not good for his physical well-being. Because the damage that that gluten is doing inside, we can't even begin to measure at this point. But we know it's doing some damage. We know it's doing some inflammation. I don't want my kid to be at higher risk of cancer or a higher risk of dementia or a higher risk of Parkinson's later on. As long as I've got the control and I've got him in my house, I'm not going to let him eat these foods. Chances are he is going to get into it occasionally. But I'm not going to, I just can't do that. It's as if you say to me, well, my son is going to school and all the other kids are drinking wine or beer in the parking lot, and I just found out my kid is doing it. Am I going to say, oh, well, all the other kids are doing it, you can do it? Most people have very specific values around that. No, they're not going to let their kid go out in the parking lot or encourage their kid to go out in the parking lot and drink beer or wine with their friends or even allow it. You're going to stop it. This is similar. Actually, quite frankly, I would rather you give my kid a glass of wine than to give them something with gluten in it. I think it will cause far less damage. First of all, he'd probably fall asleep before he had enough of it to really hurt him. But just based on what I know about the biochemistry, the physiology of how this works, I would rather give my kid a glass of wine. It's a similar thing with cigarettes. If he was going off and smoking because his friends were smoking or doing marijuana, I wouldn't just close my eyes and say, oh, well, everybody's doing it. You got to let them do it. It's the same thing with the foods. You really need to be careful with your kids because you are their caretaker. You are the responsible. So maybe you're willing to live with a little of the behavior, but are you willing to live with them then developing Parkinson's when they're in their 30s or them at a higher risk of cancer or all the other thyroid issues, autoimmune problems that are more widespread, diabetes? I don't think it's worth the risk. I think we really need to look at these things. If your kid has a sensitivity to gluten, you need to keep it off. If your kid is eating sugar on a regular basis, you need to be focused on getting that out of their diet to help their brain chemistry. So it's really, really important. These are really important concepts. I can't tell you how many cases I have seen of complete turns around in people's lives from getting off of gluten. And don't you want that for your child? I really encourage you to look at this. Just take a look. Either decide to do a trial of gluten-free, try it for a month, and then introduce it back. And when you see the difference in your kid, you will probably not be willing to go back. Or get them tested, and that way you can show them, you can show the other family members what's going on. As far as implementing the diet, we're going to be talking a lot more through this month. This is the beginning of Kids Month, and we've got a lot of activities planned. We've got 4 more Blog Talk radio shows. I've got 2 different experts coming on. One's going to be talking about dyslexia and the effects of diet and structure and posture and brain chemistry related stuff related to dyslexia. I've got another one who is going to talk about the immune system related to children's health. And then I've got another couple of shows, and I can't remember we don't have the exact schedule laid out, but we have 4 different shows coming up. We're going to be talking about next week, we're going to be talking about foods and how to involve children in eating, in making the foods, because that's really important, how to involve them in their health, how to really inform them and educate them about how the foods are affecting their body, their brain, and helping them to take charge. I've been working on this with my son. He gets it. He generally doesn't do it, but occasionally he just goes out and he defies it. I want to get to the point where he understands it even better and is willing to really, really take this seriously. So we'll be doing another show next week, and that'll be talking more about the foods and the relationship and how to do it. We're going to be teaching a class on the 22nd, a local class, but you can also attend online, and that'll teach you how to actually get some of these foods into the kids, how to make these foods taste delicious and wonderful, and teach the kids how to do it themselves. And this will be a very interactive, hands-on class for kids, and stay tuned. I'll be getting you more information about that. So this is Dr. Rita Marie Loscalzo, www.drritamarie.com. If you go to /gluten-free, you can download my free toolkit, gluten-free survival kit, which has lists and recipes and a copy of my paper that I wrote on the neurodevelopmental effects of gluten. It's a very nice packet. So I encourage you to do that. I encourage you to really consider this, going gluten-free or testing your child to see if gluten-free is going to be an issue. Even if your kid does not have problems now, it can be very good for preventing problems. So take care, and we'll talk to you again next week. Have a vibrant day.